We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're back, we're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air this 29th day of June 2010. And it's a bright, clear, sunny day in Sydney. A little bit chilly as we're in the middle of winter. But in the studio, it's Bill Cable from Mediate Now. And with me, I have Ian Purdy from ianpurdy.com.
Yes, good morning, Bill. Good morning, listeners.
And we have Phil York from Dads in Distress.
Good morning, Bill. Good morning, Ian. Good morning, everyone.
So we have a very packed, busy program today. First of all, we'll be speaking to an author, and we'll be going over to Canada for that discussion. We'll be speaking with Molly Murphy, who has recently produced a book called Winner Take All. Winner Take All is an expose about how the current legal system unfairly favours women when it comes to divorce and child support. Molly draws on the stories of friends and acquaintances to illustrate her point. So it's a story that's familiar to many of us in Australia, and it'll be interesting to hear what the take is on that in Canada. After that, we will be speaking with Andrea Haywood, who is the chief executive of DNA Queensland, and they do paternity and DNA testing. Andrea recently spoke at the Lone Fathers Association conference held in Canberra, and it'll be very interesting to hear what she's got to say about testing and who she does the tests for and what they're used for. And finally, we'll be trying to squeeze in an interview with Robin Inslay. Robin is the president of the Lone Fathers Association in Rockhampton, and Robin is going to update us on his take from that conference that Dads on the Air was present at as well, Lone Fathers Association conference held in Canberra. So, before we get on with the program, we have a few news items. One I just wanted to start with is an address from the President of the USA, President Barack Obama, who on the occasion of Father's Day coming up in America addressed the nation as follows. Good afternoon. As the father of two young daughters, I know that being a father is an important job that any man can have. My own father left my family when I was 2 years old, and I was raised by my mother and wonderful grandparents who provided the support that helped me get to where I am today. But I still felt throughout my childhood it's something that leaves a hole that doesn't go away. Studies show that children who grow up without their fathers are more likely to drop out of high school, go to jail, or become teen fathers themselves. And while no government program can fill the role that fathers do take on, what we can do is try to support fathers who are willing to step up in their responsibilities as parents, partners, and providers. This Father's Day, I'm thankful for the opportunity to be a dad to my daughters, and I'm thankful for all the wonderful fathers, grandfathers, brothers, and friends who are doing their best to make a difference for the child. Happy Father's Day. Sincerely, President Barack Obama. So it's good to see the dads of this world are getting some support from right at the top. Now, I think we've got a few other stories in.
Yes, this one from the Sunday Telegraph. Mobiles too dangerous for children is the headline. Meowling Lamb has written, children have been warned to text rather than talk on their mobile phones by the federal government's radiation safety watchdog. The official caution was issued last week by the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency following a decade-long study into health effects of using mobile phones. The agency said children needed to take precautions to protect themselves from exposure to radiation because health risks from their long-term mobile phone use were still unknown. The report said children should be encouraged to limit exposure from mobile phones to their heads while reducing call time by making calls where reception is good, by using hands-free devices or speaker options, or by texting. The Interphone Project, the world's biggest study into health effects of phones, found, and this I find completely contradictory and a load of rubbish, but it found no increased risk of cancer overall. However, those who talked at least 30 minutes a day are 40% more likely to develop glioma, which is the most common form of brain cancer. So that, to me, is a contradiction. Why they've said that they've found no increased risk of cancer overall, but if you use it 30 minutes a day, you're 40% more likely to develop cancer. Well, that is a contradiction, and to me, that just seems like possibly the sponsors of the study, the mobile phone industry, wanting to water things down a little bit to keep their industry going. The article goes on to say, Professor Bruce Armstrong of Sydney University's School of Public Health said mobile phone radiation was more harmful to children because their bodies were less developed. The skull is thinner, and so more of the radiation produced will be absorbed into the brain in a child who has a mobile phone to their ear rather than in an adult who has the same conversation, he said. It's not a huge amount, but it is material. Professor Armstrong, who led the Australian part of the Interphone study, said he supported the radiation agency's advice but stopped short of calling for it to be extended to all users. An Australian Mobile Telecommunications Association spokesman said there is no known basis for singling out children for concern. Well, sir, I think that's rubbish. My opinion is that that is absolute garbage, and that person's opinion shouldn't be printed, and that's nonsense. Well, there we have Professor Bruce Armstrong giving us two reasons, and this person saying there's none. Also, Green Senator Bob Brown said a health warning should be issued to all mobile phone users. There is no proof mobile phone use is safe, he said. That's the fact. They may not have produced conclusively that it is dangerous, but they certainly have not proved conclusively that they are safe. So my position is for children. Well, they're your kids. You know, if you want to be faced with the possibility in 10, 20, 30 years that your kid's going to develop a brain tumor, then just keep letting them use the mobile phone, because as far as I can see, there's going to be an epidemic of these things sometime in the decades to come.
Okay, there's something to look out for. Now, the next story involves our own Phil York from Dads in Distress, and there was an article in there, a very small article, I might say, but an article in the Daily Telegraph on the 27th of June, headed Men Have Issues. In this one, men's rights groups have called on our new Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, to appoint a minister for men. Groups say men's issues and needs have been overlooked for too long, and it would be a landmark gesture from the first female Prime Minister. Dads in Distress spokesman Phil York said yesterday there's been an Office for the Status of Women since the 70s, and there seems to be a real inequality there as to where the status of men is. So people need to be aware of this. Let's hope that the new Prime Minister, Julia Gillard, chooses to make her mark in this way. And this is being promoted by Phil York from Dads in Distress, and I know there's a few other interviews going on other stations this morning on this topic, so let's hope that leads to some action.
Yeah, can I just add there, Bill? Obviously, I've started that conversation with this article in the Daily Telegraph, but I just wanted to get one thing straight here, is that we're not a men's rights group, as advertised in that article. We are purely a support group. The conversation's been started, and it's now been taken over by more relevant people within the community that I guess you can classify as men's rights groups.
Yes, I think it's more of a men's interest group that Dads in Distress and many other groups are, but they're often slagged off as being men's rights demanding things, whereas in fact that's not the correct representation of these support groups. Another article here by in which Sir Bob Geldof, who's been a long-standing supporter of men, has in an interview with Channel 4.
Well, he's more accurately, he's another victim of the divorce industry.
He is, and he's a good spokesman. And to various government ministers, he puts simple questions like, "What's the problem with presuming equal parenting post-divorce where possible?" The answer he gets is usually a lot of bureaucraties. The whole point for these people is to dodge the question and pretend that what's being proposed is one size fits all, or that equal parenting would increase litigation. And when the government issued a green paper on family courts, it only consulted family court bureaucrats and not fathers who have suffered under the system. Certainly sounds like what's going on in Australia. The subject of equal shared parenting, whenever it comes up, opponents' responses are most noteworthy for their thin, threadbare quality. I think Bob Geldof summed it up in his inimitable style when he said, with appropriate translation, "Friggin' foxes get more consideration than fathers from this lot." That's a situation that's just begging to be changed. So more power to Sir Bob. Ian,
absolutely. Yes, there's another one here. This was in last Friday's Telegraph. Voting on same-sex adoption, Amy Dale has written, "State Labor MPs will be allowed a conscience vote on same-sex adoption when it is debated in Parliament." Independent Sydney MP Clover Moore introduced the private members' bill into the Legislative Assembly yesterday in a move that is expected to stir controversy among the conservative religious right. The bill was debated when Parliament, the bill will be debated when Parliament resumes in late August. Premier Christina Keneally said last night that she would give her personal in-principle support to the issue. "I know of successful parenting and fostering by gay and lesbian couples, and for the record, my primary concern is what is best in the best interests of the children," Ms. Keneally said. "However, I am aware that there are very deeply held divergent views on this issue, and adoption by same-sex couples is a sensitive issue for the community. That is why I am allowing a conscience vote on the matter." So, I don't know. Anyone got anything to say about same-sex couples adopting children? Would you like your offspring to be adopted by a couple of lesbians if you were to drop dead, Phil?
It's my consideration, mate, that
a couple of gay men, perhaps?
An adopted child has enough issues in regards to its own identity and, its roots, where it comes from. To have that lumbered on top and to have two mums or two dads, I think it adds just too much pressure on that particular child. And in my opinion, I can't see how it is in the best interest of that child.
Yeah, it would seem to be more in the best interests of the couple who, you know, why don't they get a dog or a pet or something, you know, something that's not going to be scarred for life and take it out on the rest of us.
I suppose my concern is with government funding for IVF in these situations, of with the women who can get government help to have an IVF, have a child and raise a child on their own, and that seems to me the government should not be funding that activity.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think anything that departs from the normal, you know, mother and dad under the same roof bringing up the kids is has problems, it all causes problems later in life. The children grow up with issues.
There's a recent story here involving, in Long Island, involving a man called Ted Rubin and a judge, Robert Ross, who looked at, this is another typical example of parental alienation, but it's interesting that the judge set out in his findings what parental alienation means in this situation. He said, above all, parental alienation is an attack on children. It is an attack on their relationship with the other parent. It is a sustained effort to deprive children of the love, affection, security, guidance and protection of the other parent. If it succeeds, the child will not only miss these things, he, she will be afraid of the other parent who can provide them. Beyond that, the child loses the many benefits of the extended family of the alienated parent, sometimes even the benefits of having a pet in the other alienated family. Thus, paternal grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, etc., will also be denied to the child. So we will be taking up the issue of parental alienation when we speak shortly with Molly Murphy, who's come up with this new book, Winner Take All, and it's a constant theme in these problems we have in parenting issues. So looking forward to talking to Molly Murphy.
Okay, well, we might just go to a short break and we'll be back in a moment.
"The problem is all inside your head," she said to me. "The answer is easy if you take it logically. I'd like to help you your struggle to be free. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover." She said, "It's really not my habit to intrude. Furthermore, I hope my meaning won't be lost or misconstrued, but I'll repeat myself.
At the risk of being crude, there must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just get yourself free. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. Ooh, slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. She said, it grieves me so to see you in such pain. I wish there was something I could do to make you smile again. I said, I appreciate that. And would you please explain about the 50 ways? She said, why don't we both just sleep on it tonight? And I believe in the morning you begin to see the light. And then she kissed me, and I realized she probably was right. There must be 50 ways to leave your lover. 50 ways to leave your lover. You just slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. Just get yourself free. Or you hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free. Slip out the back, Jack. Make a new plan, Stan. You don't need to be coy, Roy. You just listen to me. Hop on the bus, Gus. You don't need to discuss much. Just drop off the key, Lee, and get yourself free.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 29th day of June 2010. And our guest this morning is Molly Murphy. Molly is a registered nurse with a specialised designation in psychiatry, having more than 20 years' experience in the healthcare field. She resides in Ontario, Canada, with her three daughters and divides her time between her two passions, one being the family, and the second is to help change family law so that the rights of both custodial and non-custodial parents are valued equally by our judicial system. Molly, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And it's great to speak to you. I wanted to talk to you particularly about your new book, Winner Take All, which is an expose about the current legal system. And I think you draw on some real-life examples in your book.
Yes, I do. It's a true story which follows the lives of three fathers in intimate detail as they go through divorce. And it shows how their rights are violated at every turn by the courts. I also discuss details about my own divorce as I went through it, and basically show the difference of how fathers and mothers are treated in our family court systems today. So yes, it really covers all issues.
Yes, we frequently hear in Australia the expression is that it must be in the paramount interest of the children, but then that often seems to be used to justify anything, is by saying, oh, well, that's you know, we're thinking about the interest of the child, whereas, you know, it doesn't go that next step of trying to work out what actually is in the paramount interest of the child. It's rather a statement. And from just looking at some of the material about your book, it seems like there's a similar experience in Canada.
From my understanding, I've heard about Australia and what you go through there, and we say in Canada at times it can't be worse, and then I say yes, it is in Australia, it's worse. It's bad here. I understand it's worse there, but I think it's paramount. It's global. It's everywhere.
Yes. Could you perhaps take us through one of those examples that you refer to in your book?
The book talks about what it's like to go through a divorce. It talks about gives you a voyeuristic view into every aspect of what it feels like to go through divorce. So the book isn't really a legal book. It's more of a story of three men that I knew who went through divorce. It gives you a look of what they experienced, how they felt, what it felt like to go through court-imposed poverty, bankruptcy, parental alienation, gender bias, greed. Some of the, you'll read about suicidal, men having thoughts of suicide, and in one particular case where a father was run over by his son, who was 23 at the time, it's a true story, and due to parent alienation.
Well, parental alienation is something we're very strong on in this program, and we spoke 2 weeks ago with Dr. Richard Warshak, who's written a book on called Divorce Poison and is a tireless worker in this area. But it's certainly very common in Australia, and unfortunately it's not recognised by many of the professionals in the field. So your work is very, very welcome. And do you find parental alienation is rife in Canada?
Yes. Every case in the book, with all the emails that I received after I reached out to try to get more information from other people because I had witnessed it, there was very few cases where there wasn't parental alienation going on. So I think it's very, very significant in Canada and around the world.
Yes, I mean, you can always expect a mild amount of parental alienation, perhaps in the first throes of the emotional separation, but when it goes on year after year and it's targeted and it's directed at the other partner and the all the surrounding people in that person's life, it's extraordinarily damaging to the children and to both parents. It's definitely worth fighting against. And do you go into some detail in your book about parental alienation?
Yes, I do. I do describe parental alienation, what it is, what it's about, and how to deal with it. It's definitely something that's talked about in fairly great detail in the book.
Mm. What do you see as the early signs of parental alienation? Are things that dads should be on the, or dads, or usually dads in Australia, but in it could be either parent, that they should look out for?
Things that I've basically noticed as early signs is that the child starts to withdraw from the parent. They start making excuses as to why they can't come over to visit or why they don't want to come and visit. An extra volleyball game, some of the extracurricular activity, I can't make it on the Wednesday night or every other weekend because of something different. Or mom doesn't like it when you say that or do that, and they start to side or show sides with one parent over top of the other. I think if you're hearing things like that, you need to put a red flag up.
And would you suggest that you do take action immediately when you start seeing those signs?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really important. Ideally, if you could communicate with your ex-spouse, and that's not always the case, as we know, if you can deal with your communicate with your ex-spouse and try to communicate your concerns and work something out, that always helps. But in many cases, the alienation is taking place because the ex-spouse is trying to turn the child against one or the other parent.
Yes.
So that doesn't always work. But yes, I would absolutely seek help of a counselor, somebody within that scope.
Yes. And because the lack of recognition, some people, there are some movements that actually deny the existence of parental alienation. I think it's all a plot by dads. Have you come up against any opposition in taking the stand you have?
Well, I'm just starting. The book's only been out for 2 months at this point, and I'm starting to see little bubbles of opposition as far as the fact that I'm being a woman and standing up for men's rights is very, very difficult. But I do believe that the DSM-4, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual for Psychiatry, which is widely used, is starting to recognize parental alienation. So I think that's a real plus in our favor.
Yes, I know there is a campaign to get it included in the next edition of DSM. And do you think there's a prospect of that happening?
I want to believe there is. I absolutely pray that there is. From what I'm hearing so far in psychiatry, it's fairly positive.
Oh, that's good news. Yes, our fathers and families, I know for one, and we've interviewed some people from fathers and families who are pushing for it to be included, and I think that would make an enormous difference around the world if it could get that sort of professional recognition.
I so agree. We've had some significant cases in Canada where it has been recognized in the courts, and the judges have actually removed the child. In the case in Canada, they removed the child from the mother and gave the child to the father and did some debriefing with them.
Yes, it seems to me the only way to fight this parental alienation is for the targeted parent to be allowed to spend time with the child, and that's always difficult, and that's the thing that's fought against. But it's such a difficult thing to deal with, and probably the statistics aren't good. Do you have any feeling for when there is parental alienation, whether the child is likely to come back at some later stage, or does it tend to be permanent, or have you any feel for that?
Basically, from my understanding of it, when there is parental alienation, the best thing the alienated parent can do is to continue to send cards and gifts and call and show support of that child that they're there. And in those cases, many of the times the child does eventually come back, perhaps in their later teens, maybe in their early 20s when they realize what's happened to them. In other cases where there's parental alienation and less of the time, if you drop out of sight and stop sending cards or letters, then I think it's a little more difficult to get the relationship back.
Yes, you're really hoping against what's likely to happen, that it'll all turn out nicely in the end, a sort of a Pollyanna approach that people often recommend, which I agree
right.
with you. I don't think that's going to get the result. But I'm just interested in some of the stories that you've mentioned in your book, the book being Winner Take All, and we are speaking with Molly Murphy, who is the author of this new book, Winner Take All. Molly, you've drawn on the stories of your friends and acquaintances, and there's one story here that one statement by one of your divorced male friends where it sort of rings true with me, where the dad says, one day you have a wife, children, financial security, and then you wake up the next morning and it's all gone. You're no longer a husband. The courts strip you of your ability to be a father to your children, and you struggle to find meaning in your life. So you lose your partner, your children, your assets. There's not a lot left, and I think it often follows, I don't know whether you've found this, but often follows that people tend to lose their job in short order as well.
Absolutely, and that's the case of Adam that you're talking about in the book. He's a professional and in the doctor caliber, and he went completely bankrupt. He lost everything, went completely bankrupt, and currently I still keep in touch with him. He's currently trying to regain his life again. I don't think he will ever get back to where he was before. He lost his house, his child, his business. And once you've gone bankrupt and you're a professional, how do you get credit to start over again?
Mm.
Yet the courts won't lower the support. They'll increase the support, but they won't lower the support.
It's such an extraordinary situation, isn't it? Because if the right thing had been done, he would have kept his job, he would have kept paying his taxes, he would have looked after his children and the mother, and yet he's put in the gutter where he becomes instead a pariah on society. It's a terrible thing, this parental alienation, with the effects that it has on everybody, and I don't know. I mean, I think you subscribe to the view that it's greed that's causing this. Is that your view? I mean, what is the underlying cause that's doing this?
Well, I think David Nash, who's doing the Cross Canada Run here in Canada, said it best when you put people at war with one another. You're taking two people who already don't like each other. That's why they're getting a divorce. And we get them to hire lawyers and go to war with each other. Now, what sense comes from that? How can you say that's in the good of the child or for the good of the child? So I think when I say in the book that it's greed, well, it's greed in many ways, I guess. It's greed in the sense that certainly whoever has the child tends to get the support payment. It's greed in the sense that the person is trying to manipulate the child and bring them onto their side so that they're going to hurt or harm the other person. The real person they're harming is that poor child, unfortunately.
Mm. And I guess it's also a power play, isn't it, as well as the greed and the, certainly the lawyers in many cases contribute to the problems rather than help solve them. But the alienating parent, I think there must be an element of having a power play in there.
Yes, I so agree, and it's unfortunate because lawyers, in Canada and around the world, they tend to capitalize on people when they're very vulnerable. And now there are some extremely good lawyers out there, and they do a fantastic job. But in many cases, their job is to defend their client, so at whatever cost. And unfortunately, the family law is just not something that I think should be in the courts or should be in lawyers' hands. I think there should be mediators or another way to do this so that the best interests of children are really, truly looked after.
Yes, I have to agree with you. I mean, the system in Australia is set up to make it as adversarial as possible, but there are some moves afoot to involve the mediators more. Of course, the problem we do have a problem with family court judges who've been there 20 years and they've seen everything, they know everything, and they base it on their own happy family lives when they come to these unthinking, unfeeling decisions in many cases, but. We are having a move, they're considering at the moment in Australia, to move to more of an arbitration, perhaps a conciliation, mediation move, rather than the adversarial court process. So I think that may be disadvantageous to some of the practitioners, but it's got to be in the interest of the community if we can move away from that adversarial system.
Well, that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah, because I'm sure it's the same in Canada, but it's a multi-billion-dollar business in Australia, and it's the number of family law specialists seems to be growing, and it's huge money. And of course, people are desperate in this area. They're not concerned about how much money they pay. They just want to maintain the relationship with their children.
Absolutely, and it's very much the same. It's big business here in Canada, also. Unfortunately, once the system is set up, trying to change the system is extremely difficult, and it takes a lot of planning. I don't know whether I'll see it in my lifetime, but I know that I'm going to fight to make it happen.
Well, it's interesting you say that because you first got into this in your own divorce, I understand. I hope you don't mind talking about it, but I think it's in your book that that when you went to go through the normal process of having a divorce, you suddenly found that your former husband was being treated so poorly that it really got you motivated to do something about it.
Absolutely. That's how I start the book out, because I want the reader to come with me as I go into the lawyer's office and discuss divorce. And I think I described it as a buffet for me. I literally, from pensions to child support to spousal support, the house, the works. I knew I could take that. I had every opportunity. It was totally mine. And I couldn't believe that was something that I could have, and I knew that I couldn't sleep at night at the same time if I had ever done something like that. So yeah, it was quite shocking to me to find that out.
Yes, well, we sometimes think in Australia that it's going to be thinking, feeling women like yourself and perhaps second wives who are going to actually get this thing moving, because men just don't seem to be able to organise and get motivated. I think they the men that haven't been affected think it'll never happen to them, and the ones that have been affected just want to go off into their own little shell somewhere. So it's hard to get that movement, like anything similar to, say, Women's Lib or something like that. It just doesn't seem to happen with the men in Australia. Do you have the same feeling in the Canada, that it's going to be the second wives and the feeling women that are going to do it?
You couldn't be more accurate in saying that. The emails that I get from second wives are unbelievable. I've had so much support from women since releasing this book, and I'll be honest with you, I was extremely surprised. But I've had a lot of support from second wives. They're wanting to read the book, and the men email. I think that's a safe way for them to come through, and they are so traumatized after going through this that I think for them even to talk about it, it's such an emotional, painful thing. And by advocating, then they have to relive this whole nightmare, and the nightmare is so extreme for them, it's very difficult for them to even talk about it. And I believe there's a chapter or two on once I did reach out, what the men had to actually say to me.
Mm. Well, in Australia, sometimes it comes down to the rise of the feminists against Australia. Now, feminism, for me, in years gone by, was meant to be equality, but the movement of feminism in Australia now seems to be more to put the men down at the or put the women up, but at the expense of men, and to make demands. And it seems to have moved way beyond an equality between the sexes to maybe it's a swing of the pendulum, maybe we'll get back eventually, but at the moment the feminist movement in Australia is very strong. It even restricts research in this area, so it is a real problem. And also the legislation in Australia is there's some frightening legislation coming through in areas such as domestic violence, which a grave concern to any fair-minded person.
It's truthfully, in Canada, we're probably marching right along beside you. We're going through the same thing. Domestic violence is on the front burner, and the movement is now they're talking about workplace safety and harassment in the workplace, and everybody's having to see videos on how men abuse women.
Yeah.
And we have to take action. I work as a manager. We have to take action immediately if we think a man is abusing a woman. It's gone to such an extreme. The pendulum has swung so far the other way that it's beyond comprehension.
Yes. Well, I think we have Canada to thank for the White Ribbon Day, don't we? That's where it started, I believe.
Right.
So that gets all, because all the politicians love to be seen on the front foot on White Ribbon Day. And we're speaking with Molly Murphy, who's the author of a book, Winner Take All, A Woman Exposes the Violation of Men's Rights at the Hands of Family Law. Molly, for people to buy this book, what's the best way they should move on that?
If you want to purchase the book, the official website is www.changefamilylaw.com, and the book is $18.95 US in a soft cover, and there's a PDF file download for $10.95 if you want to go that route. It's also available on Amazon.com, Amazon.ca, and Barnes & Noble.
That's great. So just repeating that, the first place to go is www.changefamilylaw.com, and
right.
And then you can also get it through Amazon. And did you say you can download it for $10.95?
That's right, as a PDF file.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting.
And there's a sample chapter that they can read also, just to give an idea of the flavor of the book.
Oh, that sounds great. And it's been out, I think you said, for 2 months. It's going well in Canada, is it?
Yeah, actually, it's going surprisingly well in Canada. I've been contacted by quite a few media. We've been on CBC, the cable network here in London, getting calls from the national. It's really going well. I think it's a really significant issue, and it's been under the covers for far too long, and we just need to get it exposed.
Yeah, look, that's fantastic, and we wish you every support in getting this out there, and we hope that this now might lead to some sales in Australia as well, because it's the issues you raise are very, very similar out here as the ones you've described, so we can all learn a lot from your experiences.
Thank you.
So, Molly, I think we're getting running out of time, but could I just thank you once again for coming on the program and for speaking to us about your book and the good work you're doing. It's Molly Murphy, Winner Take All. And, Molly, thank you once again. We'd perhaps like to stay in contact with you at another time and see what's happening. Hopefully there's been some progress in – will have been some progress in Canada next time we talk.
Absolutely. I would be more than happy to talk to you again. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Molly.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Innocent families, lambs to the slaughter. They separate brother and mother and daughter. Ricardo's echo is silent. Etched into every ream of paperwork piled from wall to wall, lost in the horror of Golden Street Hall. Golden Street Hall, where love has to crawl. Down comes the gavel, the winner takes all. Golden Street Hall, my heart is appalled at the contractual carnage behind the marble, wood panels, horsehair. The symbols of conflict, dead love and despair. Institutionalized horror all day. Haunting sad hearts that can't run away. All for nothing and nothing for all. Life slipped through fingers in Golden Street Hall. A modern torture chamber disguised as a court, processing daily and an endless onslaught of pain and dysfunction, of lies and deceit, while lawyers circle round like spaniels on heat. Nobody knows how far they can fall till they have been to the seventh my heart.
drive so fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child. Dad's in Distress, 1300 853 437.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air, and this is Bill Cable from Mediate Now. I want to mention the for all those people who are dealing with the Child Support Agency that the next meeting of the Men's Rights Agency in Brisbane will be held on the Wednesday the 7th of July at the Southern Cross Sports Club, which is on the corner of Clump Road and Logan Road, Upper Mount Gravatt, at 7:30 p.m. But you can get there any time from 6 p.m. And at the next meeting, the topic is going to be how to deal with the Child Support Agency. help us to bring fairness to the system by participating in the in that meeting. And you may also care to participate in the in some surveys and educational campaigns that Men's Rights Agency is running at the moment. The first one is, what's your satisfaction level in dealing with a family relationship dispute resolution centre? Now, if you want to participate in that survey, you should go to www.formdesk, that's F-O-R-M-D-E-S-K, one word, .com/MRA/form1. If you go to that site, you can participate in that survey. The next question was, will the rollback of shared parenting affect your vote? On that one, you can go to www.formdesk.com/MRA/Labour.
Tell them in no uncertain terms that it will, because it's the only way we're going to hold on to these paltry reforms to stop the feminists rolling them back in the Child Support Agency. I mean, come on. If assholes could fly, the Child Support Agency would be an airport. You can quote me on that.
So if you want to do your bit in these areas, please go to those sites, and because they're that's being run by the Men's Rights Agency, and you have a voice through those surveys. And finally, the Men's Rights Agency is also running the Send a Postcard protest with three strong messages. Men are victims of domestic violence. Take note. You never hear about the men being victims of domestic violence.
Well, you do if you listen to this program.
Yes. Second one being, mothers abuse kill more children than bio dads. And thirdly, parents, learn to share the care of your children. So if you want to participate in that protest, send your message to the politicians. Once again, go to www.mensrights, that's one word, mensrights.com.au, and you can follow the links to the Send a Postcard campaign, which has been running for a little while, but the more people we get supporting that campaign, the more likely we're going to
get a result. Wake our politicians up to the issues.
And, of course, it's very much the time in the electoral cycle when politicians do take note of things like this. So,
well, and, of course, we should say, I mean, hey, we've got a female Prime Minister in Australia. This is our first program under the reign of Julia Gillard. She's finally managed to crash through the so-called glass ceiling and now has the top job. So congratulations to Julia Gillard. Hopefully things will get better under her stewardship. Perhaps she will be able to see that the plight of men has not done so well under all of these male prime ministers that we've been having for the last 150-odd years. And we finally got a woman on the job, and let's hope that Julia Gillard manages to be more aware of the problems of men than a lot of men have bothered to be aware of them.
Yes, well, let's hope. She's only been in the job since last Thursday, so we might be being a bit optimistic to expect some results so far.
But well, there's plenty of time for us to get sick of her. Plenty of time.
So who knows what's going to happen in August, September.
All right, well, we might just go to a quick song, and we'll be back with another guest shortly.
Back when I was a child, before life removed all the innocence, my father would lift me high and dance crash with my mama and me, and then spin me around till I fell asleep. Then up the stairs he would carry me, and I knew for sure I was loved. If I could get another chance, another walk, another dance with him, I'd play a song that would never ever end. How I'd love, love, love to dance with my father again. Me and my mama would disagree. To get my way, I would run from her to him. Just to comfort me, then finally make me do just what my mama said. Later that night while I was asleep, he left a dollar under my sheet. Never dreamed that he would be gone from me. To dance with my father again.
We're back with Dad's on the Air.
Welcome back to Dad's on the Air this 29th day of June 2010. And we have on the line Andrea Hayward, who is a principal of the DNA Queensland, which does paternity and DNA testing. Good morning, Andrea.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Andrea, I know you spoke at the Lone Fathers Association Australia conference recently in Canberra, and everyone was particularly interested in what you had to say. I wonder if you could just perhaps give us a quick rundown of what you said at that conference.
Yes, okay. Look, what I was trying to do was trying to just talk about DNA testing in Australia, who uses it, what the figures are for that, and how do we actually do the testing? Because I think DNA paternity testing is so integral with a lot of family law cases and to establish paternity, and I just thought it was time to put the record right on a few issues.
Yes, so because I think some people have the idea that you must get a court order, but you do actually offer the service to people independently of the court order, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. So, look, there's two types of testing. There's a legal test and there's a non-legal test. So the legal test just means that it can be used for anything, any government agency, such as family law court, to change a birth certificate or for child support issues. And it just means that it follows the chain of custody as in forensic cases. So we know the DNA definitely came from the person we want to be tested. And that's a very important thing. You don't need a court order for that, so people can just independently order one of those. And for some people, it means that they definitely know the DNA came from the person they want to test.
So what is the accepted percentage? Would you say it's sort of 99.9% certain or not quite as high as that?
Okay, so if we test mother, father and child, we're looking at 99.9999% plus.
Okay.
That somebody's confirmed as a dad, or definitely 100% exclusion. So it is a really cut and dry case.
Hmm. So, are you finding you're getting more call for your work, say, in the child support area? Is that an area for you?
Yes, it's definitely an area of growing business for us, in that, you know, women have to establish or identify to Centrelink or child support agency the identity of the father, so support can be paid for that child. And also there's men who are paying child support who just want to know for sure that they are the father of the child. And this becomes problematic for some men, in that if the mother doesn't consent to have a legal DNA test, then they are unable to prove for sure that they are the father of the child they're paying support payments for.
And Andrea, what do you find with perhaps fathers getting these testing? Do you is it normally the case that they are the father or they aren't the father?
Look, we're finding in our figures that 80% of the cases that come to us, that paternity is confirmed. And, you know, I think that's a promising figure in that we're looking at a percentage of the population where there is an area of concern about parentage. So, you know, finding that 80% of dads who request a test are confirmed as being the dads means a lot of them are quite happy about that, which is, I think, is good.
Yeah.
Because I think for a lot of these dads, it's the burning unknowing that can be a really difficult thing.
Yes, it's very interesting that it's, the figure is as high as that because, as you say, they're probably the doubtful ones that come to you, and yet 80% of them walk away with the knowledge that they are definitely the father.
That's right.
So, that must be a great relief to 80% of your customers then.
Yes, that is. And, look, we've been doing a bit of research. We're going to be doing some long-term research in our lab, you know, regarding people who are undertaking testing. So we're sort of doing a bit of pilot study at the moment. And, we found from our figures that, 82% of men completing our survey found they were the dads, and only 77% of dads expected that result. So some of the dads are sort of a bit surprised by that result. Oh, I am the dad. Whereas when you've got the surveys back from the women were 99% sure they knew who the father was. They were very sure about that.
Well, that's interesting, 99%. So what would the normal procedure be if a father just decided this morning after listening to you that he wanted to go and get the paternity testing? What should he do?
All right, so I suppose because there's two types of tests. There's the legal test, as we discussed. There's also the non-legal test, and that's where it can be just DNA testing can be done just between father and child to determine parentage, and that can be done with a home DNA collection kit. So that's when there's trust involved, and people just a family just wants to make sure after a baby's born that he definitely is the dad. Then he's happy to put his name on the birth certificate. So that's easily done. That just contacts us, get an application form, and we send it home DNA collection kit, and DNA is collected with a mouth swab. It's really simple to do. However, when you go for the legal testing, it's a little bit more complicated. The legal tests have the DNA collected by a third-party collector. So that's normally a pathology collection centre or somebody with a medical background or somebody nominated by the DNA testing lab. So we know that they are, you know, the DNA will be from the person we want. There's also a legal affidavit to prove the person's identity on the day. Also, two passport-sized ID photos that go on the paperwork, so there can be no question that the wrong person turned up for the testing on the day. It's, you know, a very strict protocol that's laid down by the family law court.
Yes. So you mentioned, yes, the non-legal. What would the non-legal typically be used for, did you say? One was for birth certificate?
The non-legal can't be used to change a birth certificate. Look, the non-legal is just, we call it a peace of mind test. It's just where there's sometimes a little bit of doubt, not sure if this is my child, I just want to have a quick, easy paternity test. I don't necessarily want to involve the mother and cause a lot of problems. I just want to make sure the child is mine. You know, in 80% of cases and higher, they are confirmed as the dad, and life moves on. So that's more of a peace of mind issue.
Peace of mind. So in that situation, perhaps the mothers may not even be aware that the testing is going on unless the child mentions it to her, I suppose.
That's true. I mean, those tests comprise 70% of the paternity tests done in Australia. There's a discussion paper that was put out by the Attorney General's Department in 2009 wanting to stop this non-consensual genetic testing from occurring. So that would have big implications for a lot of men who do want this type of testing to be done.
Yes, I know Sue Price of the Men's Rights Agency was on television in connection with that, and that seemed to be, if that had gone through, it seems to have, is your feeling or your are you hearing that proposal has died a natural death?
Well, I don't really know because the proposals we put on, we sent back, were supposed to be all placed on the internet so everybody could see what everybody's submission was, but we've heard nothing back. I've sent an email to the Attorney General's Department and we've heard nothing back about that. So I think it's a sort of a sleeping thing that, I don't know what's going to happen about that, but it will have big implications for a lot of people.
Yes, it seemed to be a gross invasion. So I was very interested in Sue Price's attack on that when that was being proposed. But yeah, it just seems to have gone away, fortunately. I think there are a number of other scenarios apart from the ones we've mentioned. There might be testing for kinship for a deceased person. Is that
work? Yes, we do a lot of that. We have a number of cases where a father has died, and we need to confirm paternity for people involved in estate issues. And we can actually, if somebody's had an autopsy done, there will be samples of blood maintained at the Forensic Institute, and we can, with permission for the coroner, match do paternity testing on a blood sample from a deceased individual plus a mouse sample from a living relative. So we can do that. We're also doing a lot of prenatal testing where couples want to check the paternity of the child before the child is born. That's about 11% of our cases. We also got mothers who want to confirm maternity. They're worried they haven't got the wrong child at the hospital.
Oh, really? That's an urban myth, isn't it, that the wrong basket got picked up? But
yes, this isn't my baby, it's somebody else's, I'm sure. And there's, a lot of immigration issues. We have to confirm paternity for visas and immigration. There's cases now in India where people are using surrogates to bear the children. We have to have a DNA match between one of those parents and the child before that child can have an Australian passport and be brought out to Australia. There's also parentage testing done after IVF where they've used donor gametes such as donor sperm or donor egg just to check the parentage of that child, and twin testing to test for identical twins. So there's lots of different scenarios with paternity testing or parentage testing.
Yes, and we're speaking with Andrea Hayward from DNA Queensland. Andrea, for people, say, in New South Wales, we're broadcasting from New South Wales or other states in Australia, can they still use your services, or what's the normal procedure?
Yes. Look, we help clients all over Australia and internationally. We do testing as well. It's very easily done. Look, people just contact us. And if a DNA sample has to be collected from a pathology centre, we can access that in over 400 pathology centres around Australia. And also, we can also do international collections. So just because we're located in Queensland, we up here because it's warmer, I think, than down there. And we can help anybody in Australia.
Oh, that's great. So I'll give you a contact details shortly, but are you able to give an indication of what the cost would be for a typical testing?
Yes, I can, yes. A legal test, which is testing alleged father, mother and child, costs $750. And for us, a non-legal test costs $550 for mother, father and child, and just testing father and child costs $350. I think it's important also to mention that about NATA accreditation for a testing facility. NATA accreditation is the highest testing accreditation for paternity testing, and it's required by the Family Law Court. There's a lot of internet companies selling really cheap testing, and they read really well on the website, but we know that some of those samples go to places like Mexico to be tested. There's no guarantee of the quality of your result. And I think it's much better to stay with an Australian company that you know has accreditation. And there's seven of those companies in Australia that have the proper accreditation.
So would a normal situation be that you might have the peace of mind testing and then you get perhaps a negative answer? Would that be grounds then to go to court and apply for the legal testing and then do it again?
Yes, that is some of the scenarios that happen. If the result isn't what is expected, then they can certainly take it to court. But it's very expensive to take a partner to court to get a court order for testing. We've heard it costs up to around $6,000. So by doing a non-legal test, first of all, you may get the result that's right for you, and it doesn't have to go any further.
Mm. Well, I suppose if you would then want to take it further if you're paying child support, or you may, you know, I mean, some fathers might choose to keep paying even though it's not their child, I suppose, but other fathers might feel it's a burden for someone else's child.
That's correct, yes.
Mm. So, Andrea, could you perhaps give us your contact details and so people know what to do if they find themselves in this situation?
Sure. We're based in Brisbane. We have a website, www.dnaq.com.au, and our direct number is 1300 172 837.
Or 1300 1 paternity, if you've got the numbers.
Or 1 paternity, that's right.
So that's easy enough, and I'm sure they could get more information either from your website or perhaps calling that number.
They can, and look, we're available on the phone 24 hours a day. We have there'll be a link to a mobile number on our message bank. We can talk to anybody anytime.
Well, that's wonderful. Well, Andrea, thank you very much for coming on the show. It's a very interesting topic. I'm sure we could talk a lot longer about this, but we thank you very much for coming on, and we wish you all the best in your work in Queensland.
Good. Thank you very much, Phil.
Thanks, bye-bye. Andrea.
Flashing the light, and it's waiting in my bed for me. I know you love me, I've heard that before. This is no time to even the score. It's late, why don't you go home? No, you can't come up here, cause I'm not alone. There's new light, it's beaming in. It's shining bright from the corner of my eye. It's burning from within. There's new light, can't you see? It's shining bright, flashing the light, and it's waiting in my bed for me.
So fast. You have to cherish every moment.
Please, Daddy.
You have a right to be involved in the life of your child.
What do you care? It's not like you were ever there anyway.
Dads in Distress meet in your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437 or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back. With Dads on the Air.
Welcome back to Dads on the Air, and our next guest is calling all the way from Rockhampton, and we're speaking with Robin Inslay, who's the president of the Lone Fathers Association in Rockhampton. Are you there, Robin?
Yes, Bill.
Good morning. I think we've got about 20 minutes left of the morning. So
we're racing today. And look, I was hoping you could just give us some impressions on the Lone Fathers Association National Conference that was held in Canberra on the 16th, 17th, 18th of June. I know you were there, and there were a range of excellent speakers that, that Barry Williams was able to line up, and perhaps you might be able to give us some of your overall impressions on the meeting.
Well, Bill, like these are biannual conferences we have. You know, certainly the about third one I've been to, and we always come away with a lot of useful information. The Lone Fathers, although the name means fathers, we are like 40% women. That's, you know, paternal grandparents as well. So and second wives, but. The three things we do is we support, we educate, and we lobby governments for change to legislation. So, you know, in terms of information that we can use, we had many MPs, some the Deputy Chief Justice, Transport Agency was present, you know, other organisations like the Shared Parenting Council. So we certainly did come away with a lot of relevant knowledge. The main thing is that it was a very good success. Some good things came out of it. As an organisation, we're always seeking to grow. I think our society today is calling for certainly organisations to stand up for men, because there's a lot of blaming going on out there and misinformation. So we're very happy to have these conferences, because I think the community need it.
Yes, and it's an opportunity to get to the actual decision makers, isn't it, when they're standing right in front of you. You can raise issues with them.
That's right. Like in the case of the Deputy Chief Justice, he had a relevant case there that he referred to. We went through that case. It did have to do with domestic violence. And, you know, myself personally, I am a president of a legal centre. I understand some of law, and what I took away from that was his presentation was the fact that you know, that the government's going to err on the side of caution when it comes to domestic violence. So, you know, men do have to be very very aware of these facts that you know, we've experienced in the past. Men have been put on the back foot with the domestic violence against them. So, you know, we really need to be very cautious about this, and try to avoid that sort of thing happening.
Yes, and the Warren Snowden MP, the Minister for Rural and Regional Health, he had the men's health policy there, which was is definitely a step in the right direction, isn't it?
Well, it is, because you know, thank Christ that we've got some interest in men's issues, and I think this is the way that a lot of men could get some benefit, is in through men's health. I know there is a lot of men's sheds developing. That funding is coming in through men's health. And this is where we could gain together, a bit like the feminist movement, how we, you know, how they, you know, developed. We need to sort of come in through this area and get guys in there. I mean, I think men are different to women. We're out there every day. Our status is wrapped up in who we are and what we do. And, you know, we've got to start sort of thinking, well, I've got to take some time out you know, push this cause. It's not only good for men, it's good for, you know, wives and daughters, because they all have brothers, husbands and sons, you know. So it's not as though this is just about men.
And you're setting up a men's sheds in Rockhampton, I believe, aren't you, Robin?
Yes, I've spoken with Anna Bligh personally on this issue, some of the relevant ministers, even Minister for Police here in Queensland, the State Minister. Spoke to our local mayor, who's very supportive, yes, we're going to start up a men's shed in Rockhampton. It'll be, like, normally we have our meetings at the universities, every month, but we're going to move into a men's shed, and there'll be a combination of a lot of activities there that are very relevant to men, and then of course men and their families. Yeah.
Oh, that's great stuff. And when is that likely to get going, do you think?
Well, I meet with the mayor again tomorrow, and it all depends. The information I got was that get something happening, and then the state minister will move on funding. So that's the story I'm getting. Get something happening in your area, and then approach your local council, and then in turn, contact state MPs, and things should follow. Yeah.
Okay. Just getting back to the conference, I noticed one of the speakers was Senator George Brandis, the Shadow Attorney General. Did you get a feel from the conference as to whether there's likely to be a rollback of the Howard government reforms?
Well, they did. They're politicians, so you've got to be careful about what they say. But I think it was favourable. I mean, also the Shared Parenting Council did a presentation on the value of shared parenting, and that was all positive. So I honestly think that the government understand that this is, it's essential that this happen. I mean, my own personal view is that why should a child miss out on the resources available to, you know, a child? You know, the ideal parenting is the two biological parent. That child has resources of aunts and uncles, grandparents, as well as both mum and dad. So, you know, children in our society today are growing up with limited resources. I think it's just common sense that any government should, you know, make sure that those resources are there. Those resources can be in time or money, and you know, in an intact family, that does happen. So, I'm very keen that you know, and I think this will happen, that the shared parenting will stay there. And whether it's changed slightly is another matter.
Well, that's encouraging. So there might be a bit of tinkering at the edges, but generally speaking, from, you know, you're hearing from both sides of Parliament, because I think there was also Albie Schultz there, who's the Liberal member for Hume, and there was the Jenny Macklin, who's the Minister for Families.
Yes.
The Attorney General himself was there, so these having sat through their presentations, you've come away feeling that that shared parenting is not going to go away anytime soon. Anyway,
yes, that's right. That's the overall view, that you know, it's just too good of a thing to give up. And of course, you know, we look at our children in society; they are in a bit of a mess. So we really do need to do what we can for them.
Well, that's certainly very positive. So there were a couple of positive things, as I mentioned, the men's health policy, an update on the rollback. Was there anything you drew in particular, say, from Child Support Agency? I was thinking.
Well, Child Support Agency, they attend every conference. Yeah, I do feel that, and this is a trend over a few years since the last, you know, major change to child support, which Lone Fathers is a major stakeholder in, is the fact that frontline officers, their policies are certainly looking more now towards the father as well as the mother, and you know, in terms of a good outcome. So I think that's all progress. I'm very happy. We've noticed in all our branches, like we have something like 22 branches throughout Australia, we're noticing a reduction in the area of complaints to child support, and that's certainly due to the work done by the last CEO, Matt Miller. He was very instrumental in getting that happening. So yeah, we've seen a reduction in that. One of the other things that happened, well, it always happens at every conference. Branch presidents have a talk, and some very good stuff came out of that. It's, for instance, we're talking about moving in association with men's sheds. So I think that's a good direction. We're also looking at having a social arm group, one of the biggest groups in single parent groups in Australia is the Parents Without Partners, and we've had a long association with that group, and I know certainly in Rockhampton we're opening a branch here, and that will be a social arm of these people that you know, it's a very troublesome time in their life, and it's very beneficial. I know this as a therapist myself, that very beneficial to have to rub shoulders with somebody in a similar situation and be able to socialise. You get very isolated going through this period in your life. I often say it's the worst period you'll ever go through in your life. You know, so.
Now, I'm encouraged by this getting together, because there are a lot of men's groups around, and Lone's Fathers seems to be becoming a bit of an umbrella group, because a lot of you seem to have different hats. I mean, you've got the Sheds, you've got the Lone Fathers, you've got an involvement with Parents Without Partners. Do you have anything to do with Dads in Distress in Rockhampton?
No, we don't. We don't have a branch in Rockhampton. But certainly, you know, I'd welcome a branch. The problem we have in regional areas is that, you know, geographically we're quite isolated. I'm in Rockhampton, Queensland. We have a lot of miners in our areas. They earn big money, but the mines are, you know, 2 to 3 hours' drive west of Rockhampton. So, you know, attending meetings is a real issue for members in this area. I mean, most of our members are paternal grandmothers and fathers, because they are the people that are close to the situation, and they step in. Second wives, again, is another individual that, you know, does have that capacity to step in and assist. So we try to branch out wherever we can, wherever that we feel there is a need. Certainly, some people would not be interested in a social arm, but I think, you know, to holistically look at and care for this individual going through family breakdown, I think it benefits everybody, yeah.
Yeah. So, Robin, if someone wants to get in touch with you, for instance, they're interested in Lone Fathers, what should they do?
If they're in our area, and or even, I mean, I do have calls from Brisbane and even in Perth. So my phone number is 49265724. I am on email at Robin Inslay, RobinInslay at pacific.net.au. That's all lowercase, one word. And also on mobile is 0431 382818.
That's great. So Robin Inslay, being the president of the Lone Fathers in Rockhampton and doing a lot of good work, and I know you've been through the ringer yourself, Robin, so you know what you're talking about when these dads come to you.
Well, unfortunately, Bill, yes, I have a son who committed suicide at 14 and a half year old. I had four children in a marriage. My girls are all, you know, struggling in their own lives. Family breakdown is it's a terrible thing. There's not really winners. I know, you know, going through university, reading on feminism, that the view is that marriage breeds inequality for women, but you know, what we've moved on to, and like as the past Attorney General Philip Ruddock said, you know, we went from fault divorce to no fault divorce, and that was a view of sort of correcting things, but it looks as though we've opened a Pandora's box, you know.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to be said for that. So, Robin, look, we're getting towards the end of our time, but could I thank you on behalf of Dads on the Air for coming on the show and giving us your thoughts on those number of different areas, and for sharing your personal experience with us. We can only wish you all the best with Lone Fathers, and as you carry on doing that great work for the people in Rockhampton area.
Thank you, Bill. I mean, I what I've heard about Dads on the Air is very good stuff. You're doing your bit down there too.
We are.
Thanks very much.
Thanks again, Robin. We'll talk to you again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
In Distress, meeting your area every week. If you're a non-custodian parent and would like to know who to contact or just want someone to talk to, help is just a phone call away. Dads in Distress, 1300 853 437, or dadsindistress.asn.au.
We're back with Dads on the Air.
And welcome back the last time for this 29th day of June 2010. We want to thank our guests today, Robin Inslay from Lone Fathers Association in Rockhampton. We want to thank Andrew Hayward from DNA Queensland and Molly Murphy from Canada for their contributions today. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, you can listen to the show again on www.dadsontheair.net, and stay tuned now for Country On with Country Bob. But in the meantime, from Ian Purdy, Phil York and myself, Bill Cable, it's all the best. We'll look forward to seeing you next week.
We'll be right back.
care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.